slowly exhale. Again, take a deep breath into the version of you that will exist. Let her or him be here with you now. Breathe into her or him. The future is for your making. The person you are longing to be is possible. Any version that you long to create is possible. You must bring her in from the future to the present so that you can practice being her, practice being him now, so that as the future unfolds, you are the person you're longing to be. There is no waiting to become that person. It is a practice of being that person which turns you into him or her. Once you truly understand that you manifest your future, you would do nothing but manifest that future right here, right now. You would bring her from the future into this very moment and practice being her, practice being him, so that she and he will exist. And then your future is already different because you're bringing your best version forward. What can be more important than that? Because out of this shift comes your shift in relationships, your shift in work, in your service to the world. It is your responsibility to vision the best of yourself and bring her or him into you and live from that place. And practice diligently being the best version of yourself in speech, action, behavior. We all make mistakes. This is all an ongoing, unfolding process. But we return to that version of ourselves that we're longing to be over and over again, reminding ourselves, speak kindly, speak clearly, act kindly, act with compassion. And when we get off the path, we remind ourselves, return back to this version I'm longing to be. Over and over, without judgment or shame, we can return our gaze to the future and bring her and him right back to the moment. This is how we create our future. We don't have control of the circumstances in which we live, but we do have control over the vision we create and in our effort to become that best version of ourselves. This talk is actually about spiritual friendship and how to emulate a teacher. But I start with us because we become our own teachers. The best version of ourself we can imagine is our best teacher. So if you'd like to stretch out or move from your position as we're talking, please do so. Rest a little bit, stretch out your legs. Take that best version of yourself and stretch her out. So Ananda, I've talked about this before. Ananda is Buddha's first disciple, his main student, essentially. And Ananda said, Buddha, it seems like half of the spiritual life is noble friendship. Half of the spiritual life is associating with good and kind people. And the Buddha said, you're mistaken, Ananda. The whole of spiritual life is noble friendship. The whole of spiritual life is associating with good, compassionate, wise people. Because that is the model for how we want to live. So in this term, it's noble friendship. It's a little bit greater than social friendship. These are friendships in which we feel inspired to be our best. And this is actually the role of a teacher and student. The role of teacher and student is one of spiritual guide and spiritual friend. A friend who admonishes their friend when he or she needs to learn a lesson, a friend who inspires and teaches by example. So the Buddha was an example to the Sangha, to all the monks and the lay people, the way he talked and lived and ate, and the way he demonstrated compassion and patience, kindness and caring, but firmness. So teachers become our guides, and we then emulate our teachers. This isn't all or nothing, devote yourself to the guru and do everything he or she says. This is noting the qualities of our teacher that we want to bring into our own body, into our own life, and our own speech, our own behavior. So many in the West, we're not used to the idea of giving ourselves to our teachers. We hear all these stories about Indian gurus who impregnate their students. My good friend is one of them, actually. This happens. Human beings do things like that. Teachers are no better than students in that sense. And on the other hand, there are teachers who do keep integrity, who do act out of wisdom and kindness, compassion, and patience. It's up to us to discern that, to make sure we're safe and discern that. But generally in the West, we're not familiar with really trusting a teacher. We might have a pastor, we may have a rabbi, and we listen, and we go to them at times, and hopefully we take their wisdom in. But on our path, the Buddhist path, a teacher is a very important guide, because he or she guides us beyond our own skill level to where we want to go. But as we found ourselves in the before this talk started, we can emulate our own best versions of ourselves as well. The only drawback to that is it's not often yourself will talk back to yourself in a kind, compassionate, caring, patient way as you're developing. Most of us have developed an inner critic that talks pretty poorly to ourselves. So you have to learn to discern, to move away from the inner critic and listen to the inner wisdom, so that you end up being your best guide and teacher. But until that becomes habituated, it's very important that we do find ourselves with a teacher, someone we can ask questions of, someone we can fail around and say, I failed, how can I do this next step differently or better? And where we're not made to feel like a failure for encountering obstacles and challenges. So part of our spiritual journey on this path is actually seeking a teacher, and then finding that deep connection through friendliness with that teacher, a teacher who you want to emulate, who you're around and you start making better decisions. At first it's an external guide, and eventually it becomes an internal guide. Many of us aren't strong enough to do this on our own. We need therapists, we need teachers, we need guides. It is not weak to ask for help. It is not weak to seek support and guidance. It's actually very wise to do that. But then there's a place where you know you can do it on your own and move forward in your own life. And only you can discern that time and that point. So I am wondering how you're all taking to this talk, this lesson, what your experience is. I'd love to know a couple things. How is it visualizing another person? How is it visualizing yourself? And then what are you getting from this talk? And I don't normally want to kill dogs, but sometimes. I'm kidding. It just comes in and out. It is a little bit of a yapper, but I would never kill a dog. I love them. All right. What was it like visualizing someone you admire and then changing that to yourself? Anybody resist doing that? Is that a question, Brian? You're pointing up to the ceiling.
It occurred to me that so much of what we talk about is about creating space, you know, spaciousness. But this was the one time where you're trying to shrink it with that vision of the esteemed is and yourself, and lessening that space so that they become one. and one in spaciousness, I guess you could say.
So what was that like for you?
It was nice. Very nice.
What does it teach you, if anything?
It teaches me to be less hard on yourself. For one thing, whoever it is that you hold in esteem is a human being just like you, who put their pants on the same way. And be less harsh to calm that inner critic.
Mm. I hope you get to practice that then. And that does come with that spaciousness. We learn to become spacious when we see the inner critic. It's no different than that dog. It could be annoying. It's there. But it doesn't have to completely take us away from being in that pure, lovely, spacious place. I mean, I hope many of you, even with that dog, could still be in a spacious place. If you can, you can do that with your inner critic. That is no different. And then the best part of you, you can also bring forward into you. Because that's who you want to be led by, is that best version of yourself. And it's hard to reach her or him when you're consumed with a yapping dog of the inner critic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a great metaphor.
You planted that dog,
didn't you? I do. I do like distractions, things that you have to tell your mind it's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm annoyed. It's okay, I'm annoyed. Yeah, Ben.
For me, I'm like the music the other night, and whatever, these dogs barking, like, it's, for me, it's just really forcing the practice.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting here tonight, and it's like, it's no different than the thoughts that
That's right.
come and go through the day. It's, do we hang on to it or not?
Right. Ajahn Chah, who's a father of our Thai lineage, would, when people would complain about distractions, he goes, well, how dare you distract it? How, maybe you're distracting it. So that's what we're saying. You know, all of your when you're it's not an issue that we have preferences. Oh, I'd prefer more quiet to this yapping. That's okay. We get to have preferences. But when we go, I can't meditate, this is distracting me, you're distracting you. That thought then is now the thing that's distracting you, not the yapping dog. So just understand that, so the practice becomes, oh, preference, and wow, I'm distracting myself by buying into the preference, not just having one, have one, and let it go. But that need to cling, control, that's the suffering. What was it like for you to hear that you create the best, you create your future, you are solely responsible for creating the person you're going to become in the future?
Refreshing?
Yeah. What does it mean to you, Sam?
It's a reminder of a sensation that you have repeatedly throughout life. But it's a it's empowering. And in other words, I know there are other words
yes.
for them.
I like awesome. Refreshing and empowering. Those
yes,
are good.
It
does feel that, doesn't
it?
Anybody got scared by that concept? Yes, I have a shaking head in the back. You don't have to say why you're scared. I won't even. What?
Just because there's so much possibility.
Yeah.
Always the fear of making wrong decisions.
Uh huh.
That doesn't outweigh the good aspect.
Okay. Anybody else feel that way? A little bit nervous about endless possibilities and fear of making wrong decisions? Yeah. Quince, so you're not alone. That's makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because if we rely on the current person to make those decisions, that current person that we are is going to make the same fucking choices over and over again. So yes, there is a cause for concern. Because if this future person makes the same exact choices, yeah, we're stuck in a cycle. It's another memorized habit. Absolutely. So that person in the future, we really hope or we manifest as making different choices. But that means we bring her or him into our body now and we think, what would they do? I mean, I grew up around a very staunch Christian community, evangelical, and then I heard a lot of what would Jesus do. And I didn't see a lot of them practice. But those who did, it finally hit me recently. Oh, that really, what would the Buddha do in this circumstance? What would Jesus do in this circumstance? Can I embody that kind of thing? Can I embody that way of being? Well, what would my future self do? What would future Mike do? The one I want to become, what would he do in this situation? Well, he wouldn't grasp for this. He would let go. He would be forgiving and kind. He'd be firm and boundary. You know, okay, I want to do that. So I have to practice that right now so that I can become that guy. Then I won't make those same mistakes that I keep making. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. This is real. We can do this. If you spend the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks thinking about your future self, bringing her or him into you and acting that way, you will tell me in 3 or 4 weeks things are a little bit different because I'm choosing differently, because she's going to choose differently than I am. That's how you make that new habit happen. Bring that forward now. It's totally doable, very realistic. Any thoughts, other questions, feelings of jubilation? You're free. This is actually free. You are free. Go be yourself now. Go be the future version of yourself. Huh?
And I think even though you've got the barking dog, right, the self-critic that's saying, if you kind of don't use your higher self to make that choice, then sometimes you regress back and you just kind of give up.
Mm.
And so I think the power is in being able to keep going, you know, keep trying, keep taking that leap instead of giving up on that because you're not perfect.
Yeah, that is a very important point. My teacher last night, James, who's going to Skype in, James Barris from Spirit Rock, is our guide for the Sangha, and I'm working on something, and I'm like, I should be doing this already. I've done this 20-some years. I teach this. He's like, Mike, have compassion for yourself. You're not the Buddha. Like, you're not at that place. And it's an ever-unfolding, ongoing process. Remind yourself of that when you're like, I'm not doing that future self thing. Okay, calm down. You're okay. Start over again. Yes. It's Rose, right?
Yeah. I think it's really important too. Something I've been practicing recently is when you criticize yourself, basically pretend that you have someone, a family member, a friend that you love a lot, and they're going through something they're struggling with. You're not going to criticize them. You're like, oh, you should, you know, you should
absolutely
have it done by now. You know, you're gonna want to encourage them and feed them love and encouragement.
Yeah.
So why aren't you worthy of that?
That's right.
If they are, so
that's lovely.
Love yourself and yourself that same love and encouragement.
That's awesome. So taking what Rose just said and what Janelle said, encouraging and loving on yourself as if you're your own child or your niece or nephew, and then reminding yourself that this is not about perfection. This is about starting over again and not stopping the process just because it's hard. This will be hard for you. You will constantly come up against old habits. So be kind and compassionate to yourself and keep going. Because otherwise you're stuck here, the same place you are, and you might not be happy with. Right?
There was something during the meditation you said that really resonated with me that keeps coming up again and again, and I don't really exactly how you worded it, but essentially it's like you're striving towards your future self, but you're already there, and it's the act of remembering.
Yes.
And it's this constant process of sort of, I feel like in my life, like remembering and then forgetting and remembering and forgetting, and like it gets where I can remember for longer periods of time, and I suppose if you completely remember, then you're completely enlightened.
That's okay.
You get there at some point.
And then there's more progress.
Yeah.
And then there's another awakening after that awakening.
Yeah.
Enlightenment is knowing, oh, I got to constantly remember. It's not like a final state. It's an ongoing, unfolding state where you're constantly reminding yourself. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Wendy?
I've had kind of the same thought or practice, but I've been doing it to my younger self. So this
that's important.
Is the next step, right?
Yeah.
So for example, just something that's come up, you know, I have a teenage daughter, and I was thinking back on when we were struggling so much through this one thing, and thinking, I wish I could go back to myself at that spot and say, you're doing so good. Like, give yourself a break, have some compassion for yourself, you know, take some time, go take a walk down to the river. And so I started to actually do that, you know, in kind of a meditation, go back and tell myself that. So it's interesting now to think of my older self now doing that to me, right?
Yes.
This situation.
Right.
Time doesn't really exist.
It doesn't exist. That's right. And I'll tell you, that's a perfect example. There is a future self doing that to you right now. And I can give you studies that if you do this work on your ancestors, if you do this work on your family and on yourself, your health outcomes will be different today. Your physiological health will be impacted by doing healing work on you in the past. That's true. I mean, that's true as far as we can tell you from research. That's phenomenal. That's a noetic truth from our noetic sciences, that if you do healing work on your ancestors, they did healing work. People didn't know this, but they were doing prayer and healing work on a bunch of patients at a hospital that they thought were present at the time. But the patients were from the 90s. They were wishing and hoping and praying and having intention of healing for patients in the 90s. And those people in real time, because they were following, had different health outcomes then. They had an impact on the present by doing healing in the past.
So do you just do that in meditation? Do you just, how do you do that?
Ah, ha-ha, you're like, all right. It's like Back to the Future, where... Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very intentional, and it takes a lot of people, too, to make that kind of significance in study language, is what I mean. When I'm talking about the studies, it has a small effect, but a significant change, but there's a lot of people doing it, and what we know is when you have a large group of people having an intention, that's what changes. So I can't actually speak to the validity of what... I'm talking as a scientist here, not as a teacher, to doing it for yourself. We just know that when a large group of people do it, it makes a significant difference. But if you take that and then you start practicing it for your family, and I will give you an example. Many of you know my grandmother was in the Holocaust. She was in Auschwitz. And I didn't know any of her stories, and I would have nightmares my whole life, because when you don't tell your children what you've been through, they only imagine the worst. And they only see your behavior and go, why is dad or mom or grandma acting this way? So I inherited nightmares as well. When I was in my 30s, 33, I did this deep healing work for my grandmother. I did a cultural genogram. I found evidence of what she had been through. I finally found the stories. And I did meditations on loving kindness toward her because I really, really hated her. I mean, I use that word on purpose. She was very morbid and very, very difficult to be with. And so I did healing work on her. And I have not had a Nazi dream since I was 33. I don't know if whatever her spirit or whatever happens, if she has an impact on her. But I know that my physiology has changed. My nightmares have gone away because of that work I did for her, which the hope is it heals her in some realm and it transforms through us in some way. That's an anecdotal story. I believe in it. I mean, so practice this on your own. Go home and see what it's like to spend intentional time doing some healing work for yourself and for other people. But also do it from the best version of yourself. So there's no judgment in your way, no shame in there. Okay? So go out and transform yourselves, and then we can transform each other through this. So thank you all. I think our next meeting is on the 8th, which is the second Thursday. I believe I'm at the Desert Dwellers, so someone will be here teaching in my stead. So don't miss it. And it might be Janelle, it could be Matei might come. But please, we're here every second, third, and fourth Thursday moving forward from now on. So thank you all very much. And yeah, Wendy.
Can I say about the Friends of Jung?
Oh, yeah, please.
So the Friends of Jung, I'm part of that group. They're having an event on November 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. And it's all about ego and archetype. And it's going to be talking about a journey into the deepest regions of the psyche where the highest meaning is realized.
That's pretty deep. We'll post that on our Facebook page.
Yeah, and there's some flyers.
Okay, cool. All right, thank you all. Take care. Thanks, Janelle. Yeah, thank you.